At a recent New England Poetry Club Sheila Motten Prize reading, Wendy Manukin, who received an honorable mention, read from The Moon Makes Its Own Plea. She was introduced by the prize judge, Ellen Steinbaum.
Wendy Manukin is the author of 4 books of poetry, The Moon Makes Its Own Plea, What He Took to Get Here, and Guinevere Speaks. Her poems are published widely in journals including the Harvard Review, Pool, and Prairie Schooner, and in anthologies including Boomer Girls, poems by women from the baby boom generation, Proposing on the Brooklyn Bridge, poems about marriage, and Urban Nature, poems about wildlife in the city. And I'd like to read all of those. Her poems have also been featured on Garrison Keillor's The Writer's Almanac and on Poetry Daily. She is the recipient of an NEA Fellowship in Poetry, and she teaches poetry at Emerson College and at Grub Street. About The Moon Makes Its Own Plea, David Wojan said, Wendy Manukin's poems understand how delight must commingle with heartbreak, and they proceed with a terseness and associative vigor that always makes the familiar strange, as a means to arrive at the clarity and hard-won wisdom which these poems strive for and beautifully attain. My thought when I was reading this book and when I chose this as a recipient of an honorable mention was that if we find large themes in poets, in poems about large events, we also find them in poems, in spare evocations of the most minute details of our days, and in our connections with those we have shared and continue to share our lives with. Wendy's poems remind us that it is the frustration and the pleasure of puzzling it out that makes us, in her words, want to stay. It is my great pleasure to introduce Wendy Manukin, reading from The Moon Makes Its Own Plea, as soon as I get unhooked. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen, and thanks, Diana, for having this event. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to read with Richard. I'd like to start with a poem that addresses my own obsession in writing. I've been asked sometimes if I couldn't broaden the scope of my writing, so this is the answer to that. The past keeps insisting it's Monday. Go ahead, the past shrugs. Use Monday as a springboard. Get up early. Grab a brisk walk around the reservoir. While I'm huffing around the water, which shouldn't have gulls in it, should it, if we're drinking that water? The past, dressed in lazy tatters, waits at the door, smoking a lucky strike and all caffeined up. Who smokes anymore anyway? The past, which has nothing to lose, everything scattered years ago, my father dying by the side of the road. Maybe that's the last poem you'll have to write about your father, a teacher said, trying, I suppose, to be helpful, unless she was just bored. I nodded, ever the good child. The past practically choked. She was laughing so hard. So much for trying to change your subjects. I'm going to start with the opening poem of my book, The Moon Makes Its Own Plea. And this poem is called A Short Fable of the Year Before Last. All those different conversations and white lilacs. That first summer riot, then watermelon. No one would listen. Confusion grew. Children wandered off into complicated games with ropes and knots. This or that husband found his way to someone new, likewise the wives. Day crumbled into its own kind of ruin. I tried to get everything settled. Should, the firstborn, fought in all its clamorous splendor for top billing, but eventually had to admit others grow up too. Somewhere a well digger found water. Bread in the ovens gave off fragrant peace. Abashed, should assumed its place in the list of what could be accomplished, what couldn't. I think sometimes I feel accepting of what can and can't be accomplished. Sometimes I feel absolutely despairing, and sometimes I feel envious. This poem is called Morning with Cat. Dawn, a few clouds, nothing too overt. Day moves in, not slowly, but certainly not fast. As morning gathers density, trees assume an outline of existence, crenellated, many-hued. This is the hour of possibility, when it seems there might be time to fathom each blade of grass, sawtoothed, blunted, each green and feathery fern. Everything is innocuous, charged. Shadows cling to the backs of things. I hold myself still, hollow a place for sorrow, while the cat flicks her tail at birds who beat us to language, at the shameless ferns taking 1,000 years to tell their story. Whenever I go out, I try to remember to turn my cell phone on in case some important person might be trying to reach me. And I'm always amused by the articles in the newspaper about turning your cell phones off when you're in the car. Because actually, when I'm in the car, I turn off the radio to change lanes. I feel that's really a good, safe thing to do. And the reason I think that I must do this, because I thought everyone did it, and when I realized they didn't, I really don't screen things out very well. I like to have like one thing coming at me at a time. So this is a poem somewhat about that phenomenon. Ooh, the blinds like it. Partial praise for tropics. Sunning on flat rocks, Galapagos sea lions bark out summons or warning. Seaweed entices my calves, while buried in sand, ridged shells whorl their patterns like braille, stunning my fingertips. Everywhere something offers itself. Who knows, whoever really knows, what causes a person to shy away? The flightless cormorant spreads its stubby wings to dry them. Poor baby. But why poor baby? A bird doesn't know to feel different, does it? I love the world, its intricacies and maneuvers. How could I not praise a god who assigned the frigate bird an inflatable scarlet sack beneath its beak? But I need removal, a reticent god who leaves almost everything unsaid. Not this carnival of color, sharp and precise, every wingtip and beak competing. Even one eye closed doesn't do it. Anything warm. Anything warm is warm. Anything red has something to say. Anything that drifts also smudges like secrets, that intense. Anything loose is a message, endless and endlessly enticing. Anything narrow gets there first, especially anger. Anything watery pleads, though the story stays buried under its layers, obscuring whatever it is we've done to deserve this. In the eternal life of regret, Sunday looks back. Monday is certainty with a mystery inside out. Anything 2 days in a row sings the same song I do without repeating the first verse, because there is no return. That seems dramatic, but likely. Just look at the waves all moving in one direction. It made Noah crazy. Another day, hell, another hour, he'd be ready to wring that dove's neck. What right did she have to exhaustion, to twittery musings? one declarative sentence would be a relief. I actually read that poem many, many times before I realized that the Noah in that poem has some similarities to anyone married to a poet, such as my husband. So the person who's exhausted and waiting for one declarative sentence will be my segue into a few poems about marriage. And this first one is called Rental. The children spend hours peeling sunburnt skin from each other's backs. I lie on the deck, astounded by red, roses draping over the trellis, heavy as fruit. Sandcastles grow more elaborate, winding moats, turrets. Come in, it's time for dinner. My voice lost in the greed of ocean air. You walk along the beach, down where waves harden in the sand and make it easier to grip. At night, I dream you keep walking until you disappear behind the last piling. The dream tells me you're dead, so I can't be angry. I wake up angry. Where is the light switch? Where is a cup for water? Over the couch, a shawl romanticizes peacocks. Three flat rocks weighted out in a soap dish. I think vacations are highly overrated, personally. I like a little free time at home. This is called Ongoing, again about marriage. You want me to agree to an open window when we sleep, even on the coldest nights. I want you to bring me water, but not care if I drink it. You want me to love as much as you do the sapling you planted. Someday from our bed, we'll see blossoms, then fruit. But tonight, there's no hot water in the shower. It's heart-stopping cold, and me in it. Isn't that something you should be able to fix? When I manage a full breath, I have to admit, it's bracing and somehow ennobling, as if I diverted the hot water on purpose, so I can emerge pinker than a newborn, ready to love someone again, maybe myself. Wrapped in a towel, I inch open the window. I can afford to be generous, then drop the towel and dive into bed. Come on, help me out here. Thanks for the glass of water, but I'm shivering in the sheets, and the apple trees spindly, bark on the trunk, peeling away in strips. This is a new poem that I've written on somewhat the same subject called Questions, 1969. Huge and unembarrassed, my friend floated like a Buddha in the tiny pool. I drank gallons of iced tea, grated chlorine-splashed papers on the mayor of Casterbridge. When she had her baby on a bed covered with a shower curtain, I did what I was told, sealed the placenta in a Ziploc bag, stashed it in the freezer. Life was breathless in its daring or boring in its routine. Newly married, I loved a man, almost a stranger, blonde and so desperate for his young son back east, he cried in my arms even before he knew my name. I wanted to miss someone that much. I quit my job, sold my yellow Mustang, divvied up the wedding gifts, some of them unopened. Had I ever mourned my father? Did she plant the placenta later under a tree? How much can you miss a husband you so easily walked out on? One of the questions I seem to be asked a lot, I think all writers are, in the Q&A is whether some particular poem or a line of a poem was true. And for a long time, I was quite self-righteous about that and thought, you know, well, everything I write is true. It just may not have really happened. But then I began to think about it a little more, and I wondered whether everything I wrote had happened or not. And sometimes after you've written things and you've lived with them for a long time, they really feel like they've happened. And it's kind of hard to draw the line. This is called Maybe I Made This Up. My mother said, yes, you can wheel your baby sister that far and back. The baby blew fish kisses with her small round mouth while I pumped high on the swings and higher. Hello, I waved while I hung by my knees on the jungle gym. Yippee-yay, I called when I herded the cattle downstream, over the seesaw, around the sandbox, and past the distant fountain. At home, my mother asked, where's your sister? And the world shifted slightly. If there were clouds, they fled. If birds, they silenced. I can only tell you the truth as I know it. Last week, an ice cream store opened in my town, and I wrote to my kids about another opening years ago when they were allowed to walk 4 blocks for free ice cream. And each of them wrote back one at a time. No, I was 12. I was 7. It was summer, or vanilla, or strawberry. I raced with my mother to the park and found my sister, batting her toys in the carriage. Just before my mother grabbed her, my sister looked at me. She saw who I was. She didn't look away. We still have a family conversation about whether that happened or didn't happen. Over the past 5 years, maybe, my cat died and then my dog died. For a long time I thought, well, I'm certainly not going to write about that. Who wants to listen to poems about dead cats and dead dogs? Now that enough time has gone by for me anyway, I realized I did have to write about my dear cat and my dear dog. So I'm going to spare you one and I'll just do the dog. This is called Without Dog. I actually sent this to an editor and he wrote back. His first comment was, I hate poems about dogs, and the only thing I hate more than poems about dogs are poems about dead dogs. But he did take the poem. But I thought, that's quite a statement. Without Dog. She won't eat, drinks only small sips from the bowl I hold out to her. Please, I say, please. She attends earnestly, panting, watching the air. I learn to stick the needle quickly. I learn to do it in the dark. One hand holds an IV bag high for pressure. The other slips the needle in. After a week, she walks again around the block to the schoolyard. No rules now. I feed her hot dogs. I feed her chicken fingers. She runs in the woods. And then one day she won't lie down, won't rest her head between her paws. When I reach to stroke her, she startles and pulls away. She keeps herself alert, head raised, listening, till she falls into an exhausted sleep, from which she wakes to stagger around the room, listing to one side, bumping into walls. Do you want to go outside, I say? I say, let me give you the world. UPS leaves a yellow slip on the door. Sorry we missed you. I stick it on the fridge. When it falls to the floor, the sound of paper fluttering makes me turn and think, she's back. I dream her young and healthy, but still she hesitates outside a dog door we never had until she gathers herself and leaps, landing in our kitchen. She scrapes her nails across the floor, turns and tries it again and again. What a show off. Out. In, I can watch forever, her body poised for the jump, then launched, ears flapping, out, in, out. First, they're mad. Oh, I'm glad I have some dog lovers here. That's the hardest poem for me to read. You want the cat? Wow, boy, okay, you want the cat too. It wasn't enough to have the dog die. Okay, here's the cat. The cat, done with it. The cat was old when she died, her eyes rheuming, the paunch of her stomach brushing the floor. But after she'd been dead a few months, her eyes cleared. She thinned. Though she still loved sun, she stopped sleeping away the day in a nest of light by the window, her ears pricked at the slightest sound. She began to chase the dog again, up and down the hallway, around the table, and through all the arguments they'd ever had, whisking under a chair when she'd had enough. I almost stopped missing her, when I missed again her weight on my feet in bed at night, her refusal to shift even when I tried to loosen her, until there it was again, need. Want was a different four-letter, one-syllable word. And the pain was cold where I leaned my forehead against the window until, impatient with the mess that longing makes, I wiped my breath from the glass. First they're mad. The dead come back fisted, ready for a fight. As if I'd done something. As if whatever it is I did, I could undo. I plead. With a hint of reproach, they are, after all, dead. I don't know how much more they can take. My 4 o'clock sorrow, for instance, my games of pretend. Though I wouldn't have guessed it, the dead soften their stance. They shake out their hands, flatten their palms together into a prayer only they understand. Who left whom is a matter for another day. In their world, there's a name for it, which we could try to think of here with our sunsets still intact. They have a world of sunsets, eternity glowing on the horizon, but they're used to it. It's the binding they're still getting used to. The weaving and binding one soul to another, dead and living, living and dead. Those sunsets can go on forever, and they do, which provides a lift, a little necessary distraction, or doesn't. The dead support the world. Doesn't that break your heart? Someone who reviewed this book called the review Tempted by Happiness. That's the name of the review, Tempted by Happiness. So I thought I'd try to put a little happiness in. And I'd like to read, even though we're still, unfortunately, kind of far from summer, I'd like to read a poem that's called August. We can pretend. A house finch darts from hollyhock to hollyhock, bending each tall stem. Flowers scatter themselves without even trying. There are lilies under the apple tree, lamb's ear by the porch. Butterflies ignore the butterfly bush and fend for themselves. Mint grows wild. A hummingbird swoops, captivated by my bright red shirt. Take off your clothes. We have a new grandson, and so that's a happy occasion. And I wrote this poem about that. This is called Facts from My Son. I turn it one way, then another, and still I can't decipher the black shadings and white bubbles. Even when I read Happy Mother's Day, I don't quite understand. And then I do, and run outside where you're attaching new windshield wipers onto the car, and wave the paper in your face, jumping up and down, while you figure out you're looking at an ultrasound of our grandson. Oh, isn't it all worth it to come to this place together, where the people we love most are the same people, where you can say, brushing sweat from your eyes, we have new wipers for the next downpour. And I can say, you really should have pulled over back there. We couldn't see a thing. And I'll end with this one. It's called At Sea. At the end of the jetty, where the boats come in, where the boats go out, at the pile of rocks that swallows the sun at the end of the day, at the turn of the trail, at the last dune, in front of the hot dog stand, at the door to the pub, by the shanty, the shipbuilder's yard, the discarded yellow boots, the smashed clamshells. You thought I'd give in to despair, but today is today, everywhere I look, and I look everywhere. Thanks.